Ben Kottner is the co-director with Ryan White of the Case Against 8 about California's Proposition 8. Ben, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Jeffrey. Thanks for having us.
Sure. Tell us about yourself and some of your earlier work.
Well, I've actually been an executive for the last 10 years, and I just recently made the switch to filmmaking and really excited to be out there with my first film, at least, which is this one.
And how did you and Ryan come to divide up the duties on this? It must not be easy to be co-directors of any film.
Well, it's you know, in a case this big, I think you need as many hands on deck as possible. And, you know, Ryan and I met at Sundance 5 years ago. And for a case like this, there were people in various cities all over the country. And I was working a full-time job, so it was really amazing to have a collaborator like Ryan who brought his own unique perspective to it. And I think what the fact that we both had different perspectives and were interested in different aspects of the process, I think really, in the end, made the film better.
All right. I think we're about to get Ryan on the line here, but I want to get him in to explain what his side of the story is. So, Ryan, we just heard from Ben about that he was an executive 5 years ago. I want to talk about your introduction into filmmaking. What got you up to The Case Against 8?
So I've been a documentary filmmaker for the past 10 years, and The Case Against 8 is the third film I've directed. So I studied documentary filmmaking in college, and that's kind of the career I've always embarked on.
All right, so obviously this is a film somebody was going to make. I mean, were there other projects that also focused on Proposition 8 or the fight for same-sex marriage more generally?
Sure, you know, there were several films, I think, being made about Prop 8 and even more made about the subject of gay marriage. A lot of the Prop 8 ones, I think, were focusing more on the campaign of Proposition 8, which was a ballot initiative in California to make marriage between people of the same sex illegal in the California Constitution. So Proposition 8, there were a lot of films about that ballot initiative, but I think we were the only ones that were actually about the lawsuit that was challenging the law.
And so tell us, if you would, Ryan, about the couples at the center of the case, Chris Perry, Sandy Steyer, Paul Katami, and Jeff Zarrillo.
Right, yeah. So the four main characters in our film are the four plaintiffs in the case. So they're two gay Californian couples who sued the government of California challenging Proposition 8. And so Ben and I followed the four of them and their families. Chris and Sandy have four sons, actually. So we followed their families for the 5 years and sort of examined what it's like to be, you know, a regular gay couple in California who now becomes the face of the issue, the spokesperson for the issue, and is now at the center of the storm. And so we kind of followed the legal process that they took, but also how that affected their personal and family lives along the way as they moved up the ranks to the Supreme Court.
We'll only guess this is something they approached with some trepidation, but we'll ask that question when we come back from a break. Ben Kottner and Ryan White with us on the Jefferson Exchange. They are the co-directors of one of the documentaries at next week's Ashland Independent Film Festival, The Case Against 8, about the Supreme Court case against Proposition 8, California's same-sex marriage ban. We'll come back and talk more with Ben and Ryan and take your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We've been spending the hour talking about some of the documentaries featured at this year's Ashland Independent Film Festival, April 3rd through 7th, at several venues in Ashland, principally the Varsity Theater. Earlier we heard from the directors of Rich Hill and Running Wild. Now we're talking to Ben Kottner and Ryan White, the co-directors of The Case Against 8, about the Supreme Court fight against Proposition 8, California's ban on same-sex marriages. You can join this discussion on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So, Ryan, we were just talking about the couples at the center of the case, Chris Perry and Sandy Steyer on one hand, and Paul Katami and Jeff Zarrillo on the other, and you document the changes in their lives that came about because of this court battle. This must have been somewhat daunting for them, I'm thinking, to be in this public a position on this important an issue.
Yeah, I mean, one major factor of our film and the case is that no one ever knew that it was going to go to trial. So no one ever knew that they would end up in a courtroom having to, you know, testify about their lives and be cross-examined about their lives. And so once that decision was made, The trial became a very public thing, and I don't think Paul or Jeff or Chris and Sandy ever expected that. Now, going hand in hand with that, I don't think they ever expected a film crew to also be following them along the way. And so they were trepidatious at the beginning, especially Chris and Sandy, because they're very protective of their family and their four boys, and they weren't out to become celebrities through this. And so they were nervous at the beginning, but it was a process over the 5 years of making them comfortable with us, spending a lot of time with them, making sure that they knew that we wanted to tell a story that was faithful to who they were. And now at the end of the 5 years, I think Ben and I would consider all four of them very good friends and inspirations to us.
So Ben Kottner, obviously we have the couples at the center of the case, but then there's another sort of odd couple, which is the pair of attorneys. And this is a story that no one seems to get tired of telling.
Exactly. Yeah, Ted Olson and David Boyce had originally squared off in Bush v. Gore, which made them sort of icons of their respective parties. And the fact that they were partnering together to work for something as, at the time, controversial as gay marriage, I think sent shockwaves through the legal community and has been fodder for quite a few headlines since then. But it was really amazing to see the two of them in action, because they are such legal heavyweights in very different ways. You know, Ted is an amazing appellate attorney. David is one of the best trial attorneys in the world. And they really do work magic. And the fact that they brought their unique skills together, I think, brought a really intense energy to the lawsuit and to the work that everyone was doing. It ended up being a team of, you know, 40 or 50 lawyers that were working on this case. And I think with Ted and David as their leaders, it really, for us, was, you know, a fascinating process to watch.
Well, David Boyce's presence seems like a fairly obvious thing. He was on the Gore side of Bush versus Gore, but Ted Olson must be the same Ted Olson who was the Solicitor General of the United States under George W. Bush, wasn't he?
Exactly, yeah. And if you ask Ted, he would tell you that there was never really a time that he was against gay marriage, which is interesting. I mean, I think a lot of people since then have come out. A lot of really famous conservatives have come out, obviously Dick Cheney. You know, there are three Republican senators now that are in support of gay marriage. So I think a lot of people since then have sort of opened up about their true feelings about the issue.
Ryan White, there are so many ways to tell the story of Proposition 8 and the case against 8, as the film got titled. How did you end up settling on an approach? Was it simply follow the whole process through the courts?
Well, we did simply film for 5 years, and we have 600 hours of footage. So there were a lot arguments in the editing room, I would say,
right.
Because we had a lot to choose from. So, you know, we were following the legal course, and we were also, as you said earlier, following the four plaintiffs. So the goal for us was finding a balance between telling the legal side of the story and all the twists and turns that are involved in that and all of the intricacies, and then also telling the human side of the story and how it affects regular lives, and that was through the eyes of our four plaintiffs. So we took 600 hours and we spent 8 months editing it. And in the end, we distilled it down to 110 minutes. And Ben and I are pretty pleased with the balance that we achieved. But that's really the goal, to bring people in through the legal procedural drama, but also bring them in through the character drama as well.
There are some constraints, obviously, in the documentary format. And Ryan, how did you deal with things like the lack of cameras in federal court?
Well, the lack of cameras is an interesting thing. It's actually part of our film. So there were supposed to be cameras in the courtroom during the federal district trial. The judge wanted the trial to be televised. And actually, on the eve of trial, there was a sub-trial going on and went all the way up to the Supreme Court that blocked the cameras from being broadcast. So Ben and I felt sort of torn about that. In one way, having the cameras in the courtroom would have given us footage of what was actually happening in there. On the other hand, we had all of the behind-the-scenes footage that went into this trial, and so it sort of challenged us with a new way of presenting to our audience what happened in that courtroom. And so if you come see our film, you'll see the way in which we did it, but we sort of recreate in some ways what happened inside that courtroom itself, and I think we're pretty pleased in the end with the way it comes off in the film.
Ryan White and Ben Kottner are the co-directors of the documentary film The Case Against 8, screening at the Ashland Independent Film Festival next week in Ashland. You can join our discussion either about the filmmaking process or about Proposition 8 and all that led to, particularly as the courtroom part of it emerged. Join us on The Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. Ben Kottner, considering the various swings in what appeared to be the fates and fortunes of Proposition 8 along the 5 years you covered it, there must have been some real emotional ups and downs for the two of you.
Absolutely. You know, we were in San Francisco for a month for the trial, and at the time we could feel that something was special about this case and that it was heading in what seemed to be an important direction, but we never really had any idea whether it would make it to the Supreme Court, and certainly didn't have any idea what the Supreme Court would decide. So after spending this much time with the plaintiffs and with the lawyers involved, who are all very heavily invested, it did become emotional for us that, not only were we, optimistic of the outcome, but we also, making a film, this is a really interesting story. And with all these twists and turns and ups and downs, it was exciting for us, not knowing where it would go, but it was also a little bit nerve-wracking.
Ryan White, we were talking to Suzanne Mitchell earlier in the program about her documentary filmmaking process. She came from Television News. I don't know if you have the same sort of background. When we talk about this emotional connection, though, do you need to keep a distance between you and the subject matter? Can you get wholly invested in it yourself and still make a good documentary?
I mean, absolutely. I think you can get invested and still make a good documentary. I think one of my favorite parts about being a documentary filmmaker is establishing those relationships with people. That's part of the process, is establishing a trust. No one wants to share their story with you unless they trust that you're going to do it faithfully. And so I would say that's a big part, if not the biggest part of the job, is establishing that trust. And so for Ben and I mean, in a film like this, especially where we probably have 10 main characters, a lot of our time was spent, even off camera, when we weren't shooting, establishing relationships with people. And to me, that's part of the fun of documentary filmmaking.
Either one of you, tell us about the audience that came to see The Case Against 8 at the Sundance Film Festival. And while you're at it, give us the background about same-sex marriage in Utah at that very time.
Sure. Sundance was really special, not only because it was the premiere of the film, but 2 weeks before we played there, a federal court in Salt Lake City ruled that that same-sex ban in Utah was to be struck down. So going into it, there was a lot of buzz and talk about the issue, and I think we were really excited to be a part of the conversation there. So we had a lot of people coming to the screenings, in particular one in Salt Lake City that we had that, it was a very large theater, very full of families who were coming out with their kids and with their relatives because they wanted to share that experience with them. And it was emotional, and people asked a lot of great questions, and, it was great for us to see it with an audience that it affected so heavily.
Are there ever moments in a talk-back situation, Ryan, like you had at Sundance, where somebody's going to ask a question that make you really think, oh, wow, we really could have done this a little bit differently, at least in this one place?
That's sort of the interesting thing about Q&As, I think. I mean, we've only played two film festivals so far. So we played Sundance, then we played South by Southwest, where, ironically, a federal judge had just struck down the ban there, too, right before we went to...
You're a lightning rod.
The film. Yeah, we're a lightning rod so far. So, we haven't had many challenges in that regard so far. Most of the questions have been geared around the issues itself. And what's especially interesting, we were also at the Cleveland Film Festival, is taking it to states where the issue is still up for debate, and Oregon will be the same way. In a couple weeks when we're there, and having people sort of watch the journey that Californians went through and then framing that with what that could mean for their own state. So that's been a lot of the conversations after screenings have been framed around that.
Ben Kottner, in the edit room when you're working on this, and there was already an allusion to some arguments there, which is going to happen with co-directors, no doubt. Does it hit a rhythm at some point, though? I mean, when you get a third of the way in, a half of the way in, all of a sudden it's like, oh, this thing begins to edit itself because you're agreeing on the direction you've gotten to. The hard fights, in other words, over the first half hour or so?
I think it's probably the opposite. I think that, Ryan and I seemed very much on the same page, from the beginning. And as we went into the editing room and this daunting challenge of whittling down 600 hours to under 2 hours, we had an amazing editor in Kate Amend, who has worked on a lot of amazing films, and she was a great guide for us in terms of the collaboration. So the three of us, and as well as a an associate editor as well, the four of us really were there, and we had a lot of great conversations. And it really wasn't as much arguments about the shape of the film as we all like had our things that we loved so much and that we were going to the mat for. And that was a fun process because, you know, there were so many scenes that we loved so much, and I think that we could have, and we did, make a six-hour version of the film that we all would have been really happy to show everybody, but fortunately, I think better senses prevailed, and we got it down to under 2 hours. But it was actually a really fun process, and, you know, of course, there were things that all of us wished that we could have gotten into the film, but we all knew that we couldn't get everything in. And hopefully we'll find other ways to share some of those other things through DVD extras and other ways of presenting them.
Well, you sort of read my mind, which is pretty obvious anyway, but are you thinking of releasing the six-hour version on DVD or Blu-ray?
Maybe not the six-hour version, but we might have some extra scenes.
I think maybe only our moms would want to watch that.
Maybe not. But I'm curious about process, though, because you've got life happening on the screen in front of you, and you're obviously not applying much pressure to determine what happens there. But so then do you have logs? I mean, these catalog sized lists of what the clips are and the sound bites and all that stuff. Do you have a general script? Do you sort of have to work on feel at some point?
Yeah, I mean, it's when you're making a 5-year film, it's a laborious process, and then you end up with a lot of footage, obviously. So then Ben and I were lucky that we won some grants pretty early on from the Sundance Institute in Tribeca, and Cal Humanities and the Cal Endowment all gave us grants, and so we were able to hire someone full-time who watched all of our footage for us, because Ben and I were continuing to shoot the footage over the 5 years, and we were actually shooting it ourselves, but we weren't watching the footage once it went on hard drives or went into the safety deposit box. And so we were able to hire our associate producer, Karen Bortz, full-time, and she actually watched all 600 hours of footage that we had shot and logged it all. So then Ben and I were able to spend nights sort of reading through the logs and revisiting the stuff that we had shot and begin scripting out the way the film would go. And so, yeah, those logs become the basis for the edit, basically, and making sure that nothing gets lost, because there were so many diamonds in the rough, or things that one of us had filmed that the other one didn't know about, or vice versa, or things we had forgotten about that we rediscovered through the logs that make the film that much better.
Wow, getting those people logging really made the difference, it sounds like.
They do, yeah.
You took away the documentary directing prize at Sundance. How does that feel?
Amazing.
Terrible.
I think both of us have been going to Sundance for a really long time. It was my 10th year attending. I had never obviously had a film there before, and Ryan had been there several times too. So for us, being recognized by these people that we've looked up to for so long, I think was incredible.
What do you want people to take away from The Case Against 8? What's the thought they need to leave that room with in your minds, Ben?
I think one of the strong messages to me is that, you can make a difference no matter what your issue is. To us, it wasn't really about saying whether gay marriage is right or wrong. It's about this process of individuals in our system who are able to make change through the work that they do, and that anybody can do that. And I hope that this encourages people to take that into their own lives.
And Ryan?
Sort of in that same vein that, bipartisanship is a big part of our film. And so, like Ben said, it's not a movie about whether gay marriage is right or wrong, but it is about starting a conversation about these issues. And so I think Ted Olson and David Boies are great lead characters for that, but we hope that'll extend to conversations after the film as well amongst, the press and audiences that have seen it, and sort of discussing, does this have to be a political issue, or can we find common ground? So we hope basically it'll just spark dialogue in all the other states, especially the 33 states where gay marriage is still illegal, for people to start considering the matter in an apolitical way.
All right, more dialogue coming for sure. Ben Cotner and Ryan White are the co-directors of The Case Against 8, screening at the Ashland Independent Film Festival next week. Gentlemen, thank you both.
Thank you.
You also want to thank Tracy Droz-Tregos, who co-directed Rich Hill. She was on earlier in the program, as was Suzanne Mitchell, the director of Running Wild, The Life of Dayton O. Hyde, all at the Ashland Independent Film Festival. Tomorrow here on the Jefferson Exchange, we'll talk about the 50th anniversary of the Crescent City tsunami. We'll talk about a clean energy report on Oregon, and then we'll talk about the medication, opioid pain medication, and how those things are regulated. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. I'll be off. Milt Radford will host instead. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.